Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Tonight, Amy Adamson tells a story of Paradise Lost. For Mrs. Adamson and her husband, moving to a rural property near Baldwin, Kansas, seemed like a dream come true. However, property rights from the 1800s allowed strangers to access the oil beneath her home, ruining the quiet country life she and her family had hoped to build. Although Adamson's story is specific to her and a few of her neighbors, you may be alarmed to learn that owning land may not mean you have full control of that land. Adamson's story is just another example of how big business is allowed privileges that trample common sense and individual rights. This show was recorded on May 6th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show begins with a speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
Hello, I'm George Baggett with the Forum Committee. Welcome to All Souls Unitarian Forum, one of the older conversations in Kansas City. The Forum's mission is to afford a platform for the discussion of significant issues, especially those which involve ethical values in the contemporary world, and to promote critical thinking. This morning's topic reminds me of a story about two farm guys, brothers, who were on the telephone talking. One of them had a dead skunk in front of his house, and the other one just heard about it. And they had completely different perspectives on that issue. And this morning, Amy Adamson is a concerned citizen and landowner near Baldwin, Kansas. She and her husband are trying to protect their property and quality of life from the oil and gas operations. So they essentially have a dead skunk in front of their house as well. Ms. Adams?
Good morning. Thank you so much for inviting me to come and share our story. As he said, my name is Amy Adamson. My parents moved our family to Kansas in 1987. I graduated from Kansas State University in 1992. With a degree in business management, and have worked for a telecom company that's headquartered in Kansas for nearly 26 years. My husband and I have been married for 21 years, and we have two sons. Blake is 19 and Eli is 14. We're members of the Lighthouse Baptist Church. So before I get into the happenings of the last 5 years, I want to share with you some of our history, some history about myself, my family, and my faith. As it relates to this topic. As I mentioned, my husband and I have been married for 21 years. We've known each other since high school. We're Missouri kids from Jefferson City. We were married in 1996 and lived in Roland Park, just down the road. In 2001, we decided that we were ready to find some land in the country to build a home, to plant our roots, so to speak. And that summer of 2001, we were coming back from Lake Pomona, where we'd spent the weekend visiting with some friends, and we decided to take the scenic route along Highway 56 through Baldwin City. And when we approached Baldwin City, I had told my husband about how I had been through there a couple times recently when I'd gone out to visit my parents, and it's such a quaint town, and we were only seeing it from Highway 56. We hadn't even seen Baker University and how beautiful that is. But as we passed through the town and we went a few more miles and we saw a sign at the end of the road that we were passing, and it said, land for sale, 5 acres. And we both looked at each other and I said, well, we're already all the way out here. Let's just turn around and go check it out. And so we did. And as we drove down the gravel road, kept going and going, so it seemed, passing several open fields. And I said, if it's much further, just turn around. And he said, if it's not that patch of woods up there, I am turning around. I don't want to live on the prairie. Remember, we're Missouri kids and we needed trees. As it turned out, it was that patch of woods right up there. And as we pulled in, we were in awe. It was completely wooded. There was a family who had pulled in to look at the property, and then there was another vehicle that was further back. And so as we drove back down the access road or driveway or whatever road was on the property, we weren't sure what that was for, We talked to the man that was driving out, and he said that he had contacted the sellers and told us what the asking price was. It was in our budget. It was significantly less than properties that we'd looked at in Johnson County and even in Leavenworth County. So we took down the number and drove home to Roland Park. On the way, I called the seller, confirmed the asking price. He explained the boundary lines, and after I hung up with him, I turned to my husband and said, "I think we should make an offer." Scott was a little bit more hesitant than me. He said, "Don't you think we need to at least check it out, go walk the property, find out about the schools and the community?" So I said, "Okay, let's unpack, get something to eat, and go back out there to walk the property. And tomorrow I'll start making phone calls, and I will pray." So our journey began. We did drive 40 miles back to, or I don't know if it was 40 miles, 40 minutes it took us to drive back to the property that night. We walked the entire thing and spent the next 2 days calling everyone I knew who knew anything about Baldwin City, Kansas. I called a work colleague who had built a home near Baldwin City. I called a friend who connected us with an Olathe police detective who had just moved to Baldwin City. I discussed it with a friend whose husband was an attorney and judge in the area. Everyone gave Baldwin City thumbs up. It's a nice, clean, safe community with good churches and good schools, has Baker University. It's all around a great place to raise a family. I also prayed. I prayed that if we were supposed to move forward to purchase this property, that he would open doors for us and make it happen. On Tuesday night of that week, we made an offer, and the next day, our offer was accepted. There were several things that transpired between the time that we made the offer, it was accepted, and we had the closing. We hooked up with a local banker, and he made sure that we were able to access water for a water well, because there's no rural water in that part of Douglas County, and several other things just to make sure that we were protected. And then during the closing, the seller told us that he had had several other offers on the property for more than what they had agreed to sell the property to us for, but because he had given us his word, he kept his word, and we went forward with the transaction. So like I said, we worked with a local bank. We also worked with a local builder in Baldwin City. The five-acre lot was transformed into a beautiful park-like setting with huge trees and an 8-foot waterfall off the back corner of our property at the end of the creek. Our address is even 123. Everything was coming together beautifully. Our prayers had been answered, and our dream had become a reality. Then 5 years after building our home, we had the opportunity to purchase the 10 acres across the fence line. We purchased it primarily because we wanted to maintain our peaceful and quiet homestead, and we leased that land to our neighbor for the purpose of grazing cattle and growing hay. So on this picture, if you can look toward the bottom of the page, you'll see a straight line with a little loop, looks like a P. Across the fence line in the woods, that's where our house is. That area in between is the 10 acres we purchased. There was nothing on it. It was just open pasture with some trees, and there was a fence that went across it, and I believe a gate on the back side of it. In January of 2013, which was 5 years ago, an oil operator approached us, stating that he and his stakeholders were going to be making a lot of improvements to the oil operation associated with our land, also known as fracking. To start, he built a new access road. It's 40 feet wide. It extends to the back half of our 10 acres. He also built a new tank battery site and a big semi-truck turnaround. Combined, these items take up over an acre of the surface. All of the fences, the gate, and several trees were removed. There are now 4 new oil wells and 3 injection wells on our 10 acres. I think the next picture shows the tank battery site. There it is. That was all covered in trees before. And then on the 160-acre section, there are 8 homes, several barns, and 4 ponds. All of these homes were built within the last 25 years. We live less than a mile from the Baldwin City Lake. When we and our neighbors bought each of these properties and built homes, there were only a few semi-functioning oil wells, a couple non-functioning oil wells also. On our 5 acres, there were no oil or injection wells, and none were proposed. Any oil activity occurring prior to January 2013 was minimal and not invasive to the quiet enjoyment of our properties. Since these improvements started in 2013, we've experienced huge ruts, downed fences, major sections of woods are completely gone. My husband witnessed and reported an oil well that was spewing oil. There are oil wells very near water wells, an oil well within 40 feet of our neighbor's barn, pits that were left open for months. They look a lot like that one. And to our knowledge, there are at least 2 old wells that weren't properly plugged prior to the improvements. These 2 wells have leaked injection fluids to the surface. That's what it looks like when it comes up. One of those wells that wasn't properly plugged prior to all of these improvements, it's leaked for nearly 2 years. Most of these items, the Kansas Corporation Commission has come to our properties to witness, to investigate, and oversee some of the required repairs. Per the oil operator's design, he planned to drill 64 new wells and at least 42 new injection wells across the 160 acres. Now, the black flags in the photo, in the picture, are oil wells, and the lighter gray, those are injection wells. It's called a 5-spot pattern. This is a new pattern in eastern Kansas that's being used. As of today, we have 28 oil wells, 10 injection wells across the 160 acres. Multiple times a week, often several times a day, there's an oil tanker truck that comes down that new road, as well as very large water trucks that are associated with the injection fluids. They drive on that new road each day. And an employee of the oil operator drives his pickup truck through the fields every single day to check every single well. Now, I want you to understand that the mineral rights did come with the 10 acres of land that we bought. However, if you purchase land and you didn't write the lease, and if the lease has no verbiage to protect future owners and home builders, owning the mineral rights gives you no say in the matter, except through a civil suit. These leases are from 1918. They specifically state no well shall be drilled nearer than 200 feet to the house or barn now on said premises without written consent of the lessor. The operator and his attorney claim that this text, which happens to be the only text to protect surface owners, only applies to the house and barn that was there in 1918, not to anything built since then. Our civil suit is a trespass case. Once this new activity started, we researched. We found no record that there was production from 1918 to 1923. So the lease itself, that would indicate that it's void. Additionally, there was no record found of rental payments made to the bank to keep the lease alive during that time frame or any other time frame. And we found no record associated with any of our property titles that indicate that the leases are still valid. So there's nothing in the public record that shows that these are valid leases. Since the activity started in 2013, we have engaged all levels of government, local, county, and state officials. I have personally made several attempts to gain support from the Kansas federal representatives as well, the EPA, the KCC, and the Kansas Fishing and Wildlife have been contacted. Now, most of our communications have been with individuals who are very empathetic to our situation, but because there are no laws to protect us, there's no solutions for them to offer. The significant negative impact to property values and destruction of the surface without compensation to the landowners, that is a loss. Our 10-acre lot, the one that now has a road, a tank battery site, a huge semi-truck turnaround, four oil wells, and three injection wells, all on the surface, was worth $65,000 in 2012. As of 2014, it was appraised at $28,000. The value of our home from 2012 to 2014 dropped 8% due to the increase of oil influence in our neighborhood. So you can see on the before picture, you can see the homes, you can see that there's not much out there except pasture and woods. But when you see the after picture, those lines, that is where a truck drives through every single day into the fields to check every single well. So as you can imagine, we're giving it our best effort to keep them out of our front yard and backyard. That I mentioned that the plan originally was to put 64 oil wells on the property. Those are in every single family's front yard and backyard that's out there. I also want to add that we get a royalty payment, but based on the current annual amount, it will take 68 years for us to recoup our losses just associated with our property values alone. It's really not worth it. Over the years since purchasing the 10 acres, we discussed many options for its use. When he was little, our oldest son always said that he was going to build a home next door to us and take care of us when we're old. And that's really sweet. And since learning in 2010 that our youngest son has Pitt-Hopkins syndrome, we've talked a lot about what the future might look like for him. We'd talked about building a home right next door so he could always live near us. These dreams and plans are no longer an option. Currently, there are no government agency tests conducted to confirm the safety of water well, of the water from the water wells that all of us use as humans, as the livestock, the agriculture purposes, except at the expense of the individual landowner. And after being passed around to multiple agencies, our neighbor was told that the type of test required to determine the impact from oil production and injection fluids would cost upwards of $10,000. In late 2013, we filed an objection with the KCC. The oil operator had applied for approval to drill six more wells. These included wells to be located in the front yard and in the barn of our neighbor, in the front yard of another neighbor, plus the two that are now on the front of our 10 acres. We learned through this process that there is a KCC regulation that only allows one well every 10 acres. Obviously, this was exceeding that, which is what that was the basis for our objection. However, we also learned that exceptions to this regulation have been granted by the KCC in 27 eastern Kansas counties, including Douglas, Franklin, Miami, Leavenworth, Wyandotte, and even Johnson County. You see, when there aren't specific laws in place, it is the regulator. In Kansas Oil, that's the KCC, who gets to make the rules, change the rules, and are under their own authority to enforce the rules. After our protest and hearing, the KCC did provide us with a small measure of protection. They granted us 165 feet of protection from our existing homes and barns where no oil activity could commence going forward. Then, as of November 7th, 2017, so just last November, the KCC has reversed this ruling, stating that we've not provided sufficient evidence of damages or just cause for them to uphold their ruling. At this time, there is no recourse to be taken by citizens to truly protect our homes and properties. But it's not over. The additional interest in matters of the KCC not being friends with the citizens of Kansas is becoming a much bigger topic of conversation. So from the time that this saga started, like I said, I had involved local and county and state government officials. We had a senator that came out and visited our property, and he agreed to work with me to create a bill to propose. For 3 years in a row, he proposed that bill and didn't get any traction. So he suggested I work with our House of Representatives, Kansas State Representative John Wilson. And in January of 2017, I did work with him. We proposed House Bill 2189. It had two primary objectives. One, that the KCC should require proof that any oil and gas lease is valid before granting approvals to allow for any drilling. And two, that the KCC only approve wells be drilled beyond 500 feet of anything requiring a permit to build. So a house, a water well, a barn, a pond. Our group neighbors is very thankful to Representative Tom Sloan. He's the chairman of the Water and Environment Committee. And he held a hearing last spring, so in 2017, for the bill. We were allowed to go and testify, and our testimonies opened the eyes of some of the people on the committee to the lack of property right protections as it relates to oil activity in Kansas. They were very empathetic and truly astonished at some of what was explained to them. One of the members even stated, "This is not how the oil and gas industry in Kansas is supposed to treat people." The committee asked the KCC to review their existing regulations to see what modifications could be made to address the items that were in House Bill 2189. So in January 2018, just a few months ago, the KCC provided their response. Their response to the Water and Environment Committee was that they do not recommend any changes be made to their regulations. The working group who did the review was comprised of 18 people. Only three represented land and surface owners. Quite slanted, to say the least. As of the end of this last legislative session, House Bill 2189 is dead. Now, I plan to continue working with our new state representative, Eileen Horn, to submit yet another bill that would require setback distances. By the way, other states have them. Colorado's setback distance is 500 feet. You see, limiting the number of wells that can be drilled will not only reduce the risk of damage to our properties and their values, it will also reduce the risk of contamination to our water supply, fewer holes, and reduce the need for more wastewater wells for the purpose of disposing of those injection well fluids. So my purpose in speaking this morning is to encourage you to link arms with us in an effort to truly impact change that will protect property owners against a situation like ours. I mentioned empathy a couple times before. We've spoke with lots of people who are empathetic. Empathy is only the pang in your heart when you hear the plight of another. But compassion is the action you take because of that ping. I've never considered myself an activist. Trust me, there are many other things I'd rather be doing than painfully learning about the Kansas oil industry. I look back to when we purchased the 5 acres in 2001 and all the things that have transpired since then, specifically around our son who has special needs and, as I mentioned, has Pitt-Hopkins syndrome. It's a very rare condition. Only 700 people in the world have the diagnosis. And the school district in Baldwin has been extraordinary. We've never felt like we were a square peg being shoved in a round hole. Everything has been completely customized to be what's best for our son. I feel very confident that we are exactly where we're supposed to be. A few years ago, when I was studying the book of Esther, one verse really spoke to me. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. Now, I'm not suggesting that I am in any royal position like Esther was, but I am in a position to stand up and speak out for what I believe is not right. We're in a really tough situation, and it isn't right. It isn't just, even if legally it is allowed. Proverbs 22:8 says, "Whoever sows injustice reaps calamity, and the rod they wield in fury will be broken." That gives me some assurance. My desire is to protect our homes. For most of us, these are our biggest investments. This is where we live and where we raise our families. I'm not against the production of oil in Kansas, but the oil industry gains should not constitute my losses. Thank you very much for your time.
We're going to have questions and answers, I guess. We're going to exclusively suggest questions rather than statements. And if you have a statement, put it in the form of a question. If you have some burning desire to discuss this with a statement, you can come to the library afterwards and we'll be able to talk about your concerns as well.
That was very well done.
Thank you.
Could you describe the... to me, one of the best things about country life is the quiet. Could you describe the extent to which all these activities has created a noise problem?
Well, we all know what a semi-truck sounds like. So there's an oil tanker that comes through at least once a week, if not a couple of times. So looking at the picture, you can see the large road that leads to the back where the oil storage containers are and the tank turnaround. Just south, actually, but just below that is the skinny little line that's our driveway. There's where the trees are, that was the fence line. So our bedroom is on the north side of the house. So the water trucks and the oil operators' employees come through on that road multiple times a day, usually starting around 6 in the morning. And the oil tanker truck can come at any hour. It's just based on wherever they are when they get to us to pick up the oil. So in addition to the noise associated with all of that traffic, 28? There's 28 oil wells. Well, every single one of them has electricity associated with them. So even if they weren't squeaking, which often there is a squeak associated, you hear the hum of electricity all the time. And then, of course, the additional traffic causes additional dust living on a gravel road. So, and we now get it from the front and from the side. If that answers your question, it's quite a bit.
Could you talk a little bit about the Kansas Corporation Commission and how they came to have the responsibility for this and what they're made up of? Can you talk a little bit about those details?
A little bit. The Kansas Corporation, and I don't want to speak out of turn, so I am not extraordinarily knowledgeable on all of what their purpose is, but I know as it relates to oil and gas, they are the regulating body. So they are there are things that have to be followed. There's a Notifications Act that came about a few years ago, and it requires notification of people that either have the mineral rights or are landowners on property that has oil and gas lease, or in the case of water wells, anyone within, I can't remember if it's a mile, half mile, is to be notified. So they're responsible for all of that paperwork process and giving the approvals to allow those operations to commence. The majority of the people associated with the advisory board for the KCC are associated with Kansas Oil and Gas, whether they be representatives of oil and gas associations or attorneys associated with oil and gas, or there is a royalty owners member of the advisory board. I believe there's two of those. So there is some representation associated with those who are not directly associated with the oil industry, but for the most part, it's all corporations and individuals who are directly benefited from the oil industry.
First of all, I want to thank you for your citizenship and emphasize the point that we really are at a point in our history where volunteering or part-time interest is not enough. And so I hope that there are more and more people coming to support what you're doing. And you may not know the answer, but there's two kind of related questions. One has to do with the resource recovery RCRA law, which governs the safe operation and design and all that related to facilities like this. And so the question is, do you know, does the Kansas Corporation Commission do the RCRA reviews of these sitings themselves, or do they farm that out to the Environmental Department? And a second question is, do you know if in looking at the various applications, one can figure out what the anticipated lifetime of these the usages and ultimately the sort of economic cost benefit that the industry purports? Is that kind of information available in useful detail? And the reason I'm asking is because I do think there are some folks in the university world that could help, you know, make sense out of the larger picture in going forward.
Okay. So stay there in case I have to ask you to ask me again. So the first question with regard to the KCC and do they do their own surveying of safety of
review of the design of the permit.
I know that they do that to a degree. I also know that some of the comments that have been made associated with not just Hospital 2189, but others associated with the oil industry has been that they are very limited in their resources, and so they can only do what they can do. And then, yes, tell me your question again.
So the second question has to do with whether in the applications for these sites, there is an economic analysis or a life cycle expectation, at least in terms of volumes or whatever.
Not that I recall reading. I don't think that's associated with any of the notifications or applications that are sent out that we would receive. However, my husband is an IT genius, and he's pulled a lot of records from the KCC and done a lot of analysis associated with just the oil production that's listed on the royalty statements that we receive. And I believe he said his last review, oil production on our 160 acres has decreased every year by 2,000 barrels. So the first year, it was a fair amount. I mean, the royalty checks were even a fair amount in the first year, and then a little bit less the second year, and then have considerably dropped off since then. So I don't know if that's sufficient
evidence. Do you have a sense of the horizon, at what point it ceases to be likely to be, it ceased production, not at this point?
No, and of course when it was presented, the driveway conversation, if you will, that we had with the oil operator back before he'd done anything, was that, it was his expectation that this would go on for 20 years. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we discussed briefly about the idea that there are crews that come out and maintain these wells and equipment. Would you describe the intensity of that activity and the type of people that are coming onto your property at all hours of the day and night?
We've not had any direct communication with most of the people who come on and off of our property as needed, supposedly. We do know that one of the operator's employees lives up the road from us, so we have met him. That's really one of my greatest concerns associated with the risk of having an oil well in my front yard and backyard. It's not that it isn't enough that you'd have an unsightly giant oil well with oil around it and cattle panels or whatever they'd put around it to make it safe, but that you'd have someone driving across your front yard and your backyard and you don't know them and you don't know who they are or where they've been or what their background is. I'm fairly certain that they're not paid that well. I don't want to go to any stereotypes, but not generally have I met any that I thought was somebody I'd really want to be friends with. So I don't know if I could say it that way. Is it fair to say? I don't want to get too far down the path.
The fact that you are trying to have bills passed to address some of these issues, can we deduce from that there is no legal basis at this point for you to make a civil or criminal suit against what's being done? Is that a correct deduction on my part?
Actually, I'd mentioned the trespass case. That is our case. So in the lease from 1918 leases, there are specific things that are supposed to be completed in order for that lease to stay alive in those first 5 years and beyond as it relates to production, but in the first 5 years specifically. And so we've researched all that we can research, and there is no record of proof associated with that. So in our case, we sent the oil operator a letter and said, we believe you're trespassing, that this lease is not valid, and you'll need to provide some sort of proof. And they said, it is valid. We have this piece of paper from 1918. And they continued to proceed with their oil activity. So, yeah, the KCC approved all of their oil activity. And so that's when we filed suit against them in a civil suit. Right. So this has been going on for 5 years. That took place. We found out that the oil operation improvements were beginning in January of 2013. And by April, we had sent that letter. And then later that summer, we filed suit.
I was struck by the density of this activity in your land and your neighbor's land. I mean, 68 wells. And you are not really very far from the Kansas City metropolitan area. Is this kind of density of activity typical, and what is the risk that this is going to occur even closer to what most people in our suburban area think they're safe from? What kind of risk does this possibly pose in the future to the urban area?
Well, like I noted, the KCC regulation was for one well every 10 acres. So it's the changing of the way that they get the oil that has caused the increase in the number of wells that are now allowed. And that has happened for all of eastern Kansas. So the risk is there. I mean, I know our oil operator specifically had said that he was talking to people in Johnson County who wanted him to come and drill. Yeah, there's a subdivision in Gardner that actually has a well that's right next to brand new homes. And it was put in after those homes were built. So the risk is real, especially as it relates to who's writing the leases. And like I said, these leases were written in 1918. The technology at that time was not to put a well every 2.5 acres. That was not the technology then. So, I mean, truly, I'd like to have the next bill that's proposed to include that when technology changes, you have to get everybody back to the table and reagree to what the terms of the lease are. I mean, that seems like a reasonable request to me, but so hopefully that answers your question.
I have a thank you very much. You told a beautiful story, an ugly story, beautifully.
Thank you.
I have a whole lot that I'd like to say, but it's philosophical and it doesn't come in the form of a question. But I did figure out a way to make one thing into a question. Are you, or do you know if any of your neighbors, are working towards finding a way to hold these people to clean it up when they leave? This is a huge issue, and perhaps it's new enough territory that something could at least be done in respect to that.
Based on what I've seen, I know that there are state regulations. I'm not sure that they're laws, but there are state regulations associated with the plugging of abandoned wells and the cleanup. And there's state dollars associated with that. Typically, that falls on the operator to do, so it requires additional enforcement to make that happen. There's always also the conversation around production in paying quantities, and there's not a lot of definition, at least from our perspective, of exactly what that means. So as long as they're producing in paying quantities, they can continue to operate. But I don't know what paying quantities, you know, how much do you have to justify your existence? Yeah, the cleanup effort is at the mercy of the KCC. So however they decide to handle that is how it gets handled in Kansas.
This probably is going to sound like a stupid question, but I am so confused at the idea that there can be a lease. I'm not really, I'm sure you understand this, like is the lease with the federal government? Is that how mineral and oil and gas, like I'm confused why there is a lease that's somehow outside of you as the owner of the property.
So
does
the lease...
Does that make sense? I mean, I'm just curious.
The lease is associated with the minerals. So it's what's below the surface. And these leases, they're like templates. Like if it was like today, you would go to LegalZoom and print it off. So they probably, you know, typed it off of some template that was just the standard oil and gas lease agreement. So there's things in it that are really from 1918 about, you know, they have to pay you X amount or a certain percentage if they damage your crops. We didn't have any crops, so that part didn't help us. But as far as the lease itself, it's between the oil operator or his stakeholders and the property owner of the mineral, the owner of the minerals. So it's very important. It's important to me that I share what I've learned through this experience with other people who are looking to purchase land. there's a lot of land in eastern Kansas that has oil and gas leases associated with it. I don't think we want to spread the message for people to not buy it. At the same time, we want to educate people so that they understand exactly what they are buying. Because at the time that we purchased our land and that 10 acres that we bought and the mineral rights came with it, and I remember at the title meeting reading the lease. I always learned that you should read contracts first person. When it says no oil well shall be drilled within 200 feet of the house and barn now on said premises, I'm thinking I just built a house right next door. So there, we shouldn't have any great risk. Anyway, it is an interesting thing to know. How do you then determine? It's supposed to be that the public record should let you know whether the oil and gas lease that's associated with your property is valid or not valid. But also, like I said, unless you wrote the lease, unless there's specific verbiage in there to protect you, that you can have confirmed will protect you, it's very risky.
Have you had a chance to look at the geologic substrate and the question of whether or not settlement or earthquakes or other disruptions from fracking might be a problem in this area?
I do know that there's a geologist that is looking into all of that that's been, I don't know if he's contracted or volunteered or what have you, but certainly it is being reviewed more specifically, and there's a whole lot of documentation that you can Google, I suspect, and read about that. A lot of studies recently have taken place, but I don't know specifically to our land and what the geological makeup is.
I have another question.
Okay.
Rather than go out in the audience, would you discuss a little bit about the water quality for your drinking water and its source and how you're concerned about it?
So the two wells that I mentioned that are leaking injection fluids to the surface, one of them was in our neighbor's front yard. And when they dug it up, found that there was a shaft for a well, and it had like a piece of hedge shoved in it and a piece of plywood over the top, and then it was just filled in with dirt. And that was only 5 or 6 feet down. So through all of that activity transpiring, there was a representative from the KCC who was there at our neighbor's house, and our neighbors were out watching all of this activity when they were doing the plugging of the well and all that sort of thing. And the reason this occurs is because there are abandoned wells that are not in the records, so the oil operator couldn't have addressed it prior to all these improvements. So we went and drilled all the new wells and the new injection wells. Well, those injection fluids are very high pressure. And so it's those injection fluids that are coming up through these old abandoned wells that aren't known. We recently looked up again just to make sure, is that one anywhere? Do we see it anywhere? And we didn't. So, I mean, I don't know how you go about addressing abandoned wells if they're not part of the records that document where they exist.
Drink from an aquifer.
Right. So everybody in our area is on water wells. Everyone, so people that have oil and gas leases and people who don't, are all drinking from the well water that comes from I know it's an aquifer, but there's something additional that it's called. But our water, when we drilled our well, we hit water at 50 feet. Our well is drilled to 100 feet, and it produces an extraordinary amount of water. It's a really good well. Our neighbor, during the time that this all was occurring, and she stated this before, when she was talking with the representative from the KCC about this injection fluid, and she said, isn't this getting into our water supply? I mean, isn't this like, wouldn't this be contaminating? And he said, oh, I wouldn't drink the water. Hello? It's our only source of water. So it's an interesting thing that's taking place. But we are working toward having some testing done, so hopefully we can have that commence.
So that mention of your neighbors sort of leads to my other thing, is I forgot how many you said homes had been built relatively recently out there, and I don't know how many of them, if there's anything going on their land other than maybe some leakage, as you were mentioning, how they have participated or not, been interested or not in what you've been going through.
Okay, so there's 8 homes on the 160 acres, and 6 of the families who own those homes are involved in our case, including us. So there's 6 families involved in this case of trespass. And so we've all also been involved in the objections to the KCC and that sort of thing. So, yes, there are others who have linked arms with us in our own neighborhood to help make this possible. And that's an important thing to note, because it's very expensive to have a lawsuit that goes on for 5 years and beyond. It's not over yet. So as an individual landowner, it would be crippling for them to file suit in this way. It's only because there are 6 families to share the cost of it. And even at that, it's still pretty paralyzing for some of us.
I'm morally required to add, leave it in the ground. Leave the fossil fuel in the ground.
Did you have a fun question? Just a few minutes.
I guess I must have missed it or something, but they have an oil well on your 10 acres?
4 of them.
But how did that happen if you owned it, the 10 acres?
Yeah, the lease is for what's under the surface. The lease is for the minerals, the oil. And so because of that lease that was written in 1918.
I see. So they were just allowed to just come and take it.
If the lease is valid, yes.
Okay.
And whatever they need from the surface to get the minerals from underneath,
they could do that.
They
too.
Can do as well.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'd like to thank you for coming to our forum. We have this very special honorarium. There's a cup.
Thank you.
And next week's forum is essentially the Poor People's Campaign 101 with Michael and Enriquez. So you're welcome to come to the library for further discussion. And thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, Private Property Rights and Oil and Gas Industry Incursions, with Amy Adamson. This program was recorded on Sunday, May 6th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within 1 day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.